This is The Guardian.
Today, one of China's top tennis players has gone missing. Is the state trying to silence her?
So Peng Shuai is a very distinctive player in many ways. She hits really flat, she stays quite low, her balls come pretty deep. That was Maria Sharapova's assessment when she was up against her in a match.
Oh, yes. Well, what court awareness by Peng Shuai here.
In tennis, Peng Shuai is one of the greats. She was the first Chinese player to be ranked number one in the world in doubles. And when you watch videos of her play, it's clear to see why. It's like the force of her character comes through in every serve.
Yeah, big serve, caught the line.
Off the court, she's known for having a joyful, effervescent personality.
I love tennis, I want to be on the court and I sweat, fight, and I just want to be happy on the court.
She's also known for being very gritty, very determined. She started playing when she was about eight. She had an uncle who was a tennis coach. But when she was about 12, she had to have heart surgery. And despite that, she sort of came back.
There we see that change-up ball by Shuai. Smart.
She was quite unusual in being one of a handful of players who broke out of the state sports system and got a certain amount of criticism for that. It was seen as possibly being a bit unpatriotic in a sense.
She's done it. The home favourite takes the title.
And yet when she triumphed, of course, the state media were very quick to pick up on it and called her the country's princess.
And the Chinese fans celebrate as
Peng Shuai has always played on her own terms. But now she's surprised even her biggest fans by speaking out against one of China's former top politicians, alleging he sexually assaulted her.
The letter she posted online detailing the allegations sent shockwaves through the Communist Party and the country's fragile Me Too movement.
In a country where freedom of speech is limited, that's a move that could put her own safety at risk.
The deepening mystery over the Chinese tennis star who hasn't been seen in public since alleging she was sexually assaulted.
17 days and counting, Peng Shuai is still missing. We have been reporting on the story.
Peng disappeared from social media and she hasn't been seen in public since.
From The Guardian, I'm Hannah Moore. Today in Focus, what's happened to China's tennis princess, Peng Shuai? Tanya Branigan, you're a foreign leader writer for The Guardian, and for many years you were also our China correspondent. Like a lot of people who don't follow tennis religiously, I hadn't heard of Peng Shuai until earlier this month. Can you tell me, how did she come to international attention?
So on the 2nd of November, a post suddenly appeared on her verified Weibo account. It's a microblog, very similar to Twitter. And she said in this quite long account that she'd had a sexual relationship with a very senior married politician, and also critically that he had coerced her into sex. And that was obviously the sort of critical allegation. And in her words, she said yes, because she was scared.
It is the first time Me Too allegations have reached the highest level of government.
And that post vanished almost immediately.
In less than 30 minutes.
So very quickly, not just searches for her name, but even for words like tennis were blocked.
Right, okay. And can you tell me who this official is?
He's called Zhang Gaoli.
Mr. Secretary General.
Ladies and gentlemen. Dear friends.
He was the Vice Premier of China. He was critically one of the people in the Politburo Standing Committee, which is the top political body in China. So there's seven people on there.
It gives me great pleasure to attend this meeting as special envoy of President Xi Jinping.
And he served during Xi Jinping's first term from 2012 to 2017.
Signed the Paris Agreement on behalf of China.
So he is an extremely senior political figure, and it's just really unthinkable to hear of anybody in China making allegations of any kind against a leader of that stature. It just does not happen.
Right. So what she's done is unprecedented.
Yeah, it's absolutely unprecedented.
Shuai wrote in part, "I know I can't say it all clearly, and there's no use in saying it, but I still want to say it."
And she really, I guess, gives a sense of that when she writes. She says, "The world is a plaything to you," in terms of the power he wields. But she says, "Even if I am like an egg cracking against a rock, or a moth destroying itself in the flame, I will speak the truth to you."
And by that she means, I'm aware that I may be destroying my career and potentially, you know, destroying my life by putting this statement out there.
Yes, and it's just so hard to imagine what must be going through somebody's head to make that public, because it's just a sense that you are touching power that is so great, and that the repercussions of that, anybody in China would know, were going to be absolutely huge.
Let's talk about those repercussions. The Weibo post she made with that allegation against Zhang Gaoli disappeared almost immediately. Then what happened?
Peng herself also seemed to have vanished. Nobody was able to contact her.
Here's Steve Simon, the CEO of the WTA.
And the Women's Tennis Association said they tried to reach her, no response.
We've used every option that we know of today and followed up on every lead that's been given to us. It's a great concern to us that we have not been able to reach her.
People were trying to sort of send messages via her social media accounts, via her agents. Again, simply no response. There were questions about it.
So I understand you've said this is not a foreign affairs matters, but given the international attention this case has attracted, surely the foreign ministry must be aware what's happening.
One of the rare occasions that foreign journalists get to speak to officials is at the regular foreign ministry press briefing. And they simply said, we don't know about this and it's not a diplomatic issue. Interestingly, those comments didn't appear in the official transcript of the briefing.
The WTA issued a statement today saying, quote...
And then on the 14th of November, the Women's Tennis Association went public.
Peng Shuai and all women deserve to be heard, not censored.
And they called on China to investigate her allegations.
We expect this issue to be handled properly, meaning the allegations must be investigated fully, fairly, transparently, and without censorship.
And that was pretty incendiary. And that is the point at which the public, the international reaction really took off.
So Peng Shuai had made those accusations at the start of November. And then by the middle of the month, people weren't only reacting to the allegations she'd made, but also to the fact that she'd gone missing. And they were worried. Some high profile players got involved, didn't they?
I'm really glad that there was a kind of a initiated reaction from both ATP and WTA chairmen, and it's important because this is horrifying.
We saw Novak Djokovic and Naomi Osaka and various others express their concern.
Naomi Osaka joining the chorus of worried athletes now putting pressure on the Chinese government, tweeting, "Censorship is never okay at any cost."
She's one of our tennis champions, former world number one, and clearly it's concerning, and I hope she's safe, you know.
This is a woman they know. It's an individual. It's somebody that people can relate to. You know, the tennis players who are speaking out have played with her. They've met her on the circuit. And she is raising something so personal and so immediate that it's hard for people perhaps to understand why that might result in her disappearance.
Among those calling on China for answers, Serena Williams, who tweeted, "I am devastated and shocked to hear about the news of my peer, Peng Shuai. I hope she is safe and found as soon as possible. This must be investigated and we must not stay silent. Hashtag, where is Peng Shuai?"
We've made a lot of episodes of Today in Focus about the Me Too movement and spoken to women who've been through sexual assault and rape. But we haven't looked specifically at the effect and the momentum that movement has had in China. Can you tell me a bit about it?
Yes, I mean, feminism is not new to China, and there's been a really interesting generation of feminist activists who've been very bold and imaginative in their campaigning and have been detained and harassed for that. But they were quite marginal.
Xiao Liang was in her last year of university in 2016 when she says her professor attempted to rape her.
All that time, I thought he was a nice person. I did not realize he was manipulating me.
It came initially out of the universities with some pretty grim cases of sexual assault, alleged rape coming to light. We saw professors fired. One of the universities talked about a zero tolerance policy towards sexual harassment.
A video of a woman protesting in her workplace canteen was viewed hundreds of millions of times on Chinese social media.
And then we sort of saw it spread out with concerns about the tech sector and areas like that.
The employee of tech giant Alibaba had been silenced after accusing her boss of raping her during a business trip last month.
Alibaba has a serious problem. I would say there's a culture of hunting women or using women as sexual resources.
Public outrage around the case prompted a police investigation. Alibaba fired the man in question and also several executives for mishandling her complaint.
But from very early on, there was also censorship and harassment of and pressure on some of these women.
Ting Ting has been campaigning for women's rights for almost a decade. She has been detained, threatened, and her phone activity is monitored.
We're dealing with a party which is increasingly ideologically rigid and so socially conservative over the last few years, but also that the party is extremely wary of any kind of activism and organisation. Because, of course, the Communist Party came out of very unlikely roots as a small band of committed activists. So things that might seem to us unpolitical or uncontroversial are inherently quite threatening to them.
It is painful to go over the details again and again, but Shenzhe wants to keep telling her story so that more women in China feel able to speak out.
I think what's sort of positive is that there have, of course, been cases that have been pursued within China because they were against much less senior people, obviously. So there's one particular case of a young woman called Zhou Xiaoxuan who accused a very popular TV host of sexual harassment.
Her claims went viral, and her case was one of very few to reach court.
She lost her case in court, but it did create this real groundswell of feelings, some against her, unfortunately, but a real awareness, I think, among women of their rights, of the fact it was possible to pursue cases like this.
How do the police and authorities in China tend to deal with allegations of sexual assault and rape?
You would have to say that there was a very, very long way to go. I think there is still generally a sort of public perception that rape is always somebody sort of being dragged, kicking and screaming into a sort of a dark alley.
And in Peng Shuai's case, the allegation she's making is against somebody she already knew well. Do we have any data on how many cases of sexual assault or harassment are brought in China?
It's very hard to say, but for example, we know in regard to civil cases of sexual harassment, there was a study done of cases that were found in public databases. Between 2018 and 20, there were only 83 cases. And extraordinarily, most of those, 77 out of the 83, were actually cases brought by the alleged harasser against the alleged victim.
Wow.
In other words, for damaging their name.
It's been almost a month since Peng wrote about Zhang Li, and shortly after that, she went missing. When was the next time anyone heard from her?
So on the 18th of November, just a few days after Steve Simon from the WTA raised his concerns publicly, a state-run Chinese outlet, China Global TV Network, suddenly posted a screenshot on Twitter which it said was of an email that Peng had sent to Steve Simon.
This morning, the head of the Women's Tennis Association questioning the safety of Chinese tennis star Peng Shuai after receiving what he considers to be a suspect email purportedly from the athlete who has not been seen in weeks.
I just find it very difficult to believe that a woman who exhibited the courage that she did to come forth with these serious allegations against a very powerful political figure, that all of a sudden has changed that tune completely, as was reflected in her email.
It just sort of says the allegation's not true, and it reads almost like a parody.
I'm not missing, nor am I unsafe. I've just been resting at home and everything is fine. Thank you again for caring about me.
I mean, there were a number of things that sort of leapt out. Number one, the everything is fine, which is actually a line that has appeared in previous letters sent by people who've disappeared when there's been great concern.
Publishing is not a crime, shout these protesters, demanding the whereabouts of Li Bo. The employee at Mighty Current Publishing Company went missing on New Year's Eve, like four of his colleagues who disappeared earlier.
For example, when these booksellers from Hong Kong went missing, one of them subsequently sent this letter, which did appear to be in his own writing, which said, I've returned to the mainland using my own methods, and said, you've guessed it, everything is fine.
And this, what appears to be a cursor over the email.
And even the fact that there was a cursor in this shot, I mean, there were so many questions.
I think the cursor, you know, in the middle of the screenshot, maybe raises suspicions that whoever took the screenshot was actually in the middle of maybe typing the email, as opposed to an email that was received.
And also, very tellingly, I think, it asks the WTA to seek her consent before publishing anything more about her. I guess one question in a way was it really meant to convince us that she was fine? Or was it just to say, we're not backing down, we're in control, and almost in a way, we've given the WTA an out.
And I'm just thinking back to that first message that she put out, and how vociferously and beautifully articulated that was, the phrasing that she used. And to imagine that she would then just put out a message that is so bland as to say, everything is fine.
There are so many peculiar things you might say about this message. She says the allegations that she have been made are not true, but she obviously does not offer any further details of why she might have said that or what might have made her change her mind or anything of this kind. So there are many, many, many questions about it, and I think the tone is just one of them.
So it's backfired, really?
Absolutely. It's just it really has just sort of inflamed the attention.
The mystery surrounding the welfare of the missing Chinese tennis star Peng Shuai has taken another twist.
And then earlier this week, videos of Peng came out, which are attempting to show that everything's fine with her. But it's difficult to tell when those videos were taken and by whom. Is there anything we can say for certain about them?
So these videos came out in a tweet from the editor of the Global Times. It's a sort of nationalist, state-run tabloid. It seems from some of the reporting that's been done in China that they were shot at those times, we think.
Proof of life in a Beijing restaurant. Peng Shuai sitting down with friends and her coach for a meal. The tennis star not seen eating or talking, but the date, the hot topic of conversation.
One very awkward one of her having dinner while her companions keep stressing the date. As you so often do in kind of casual conversation, then appearing at a junior tennis tournament.
She smiled for the cameras, but said nothing.
And they're short videos, aren't they?
Yeah. But what was very striking, of course, is that there was no reference to what her allegations were about. And that has been very consistent in the messaging that we've seen. Critically, we don't get to hear her speak. But also, of course, even if we did, we know that there is a history of forced confessions, for example, in China, of people recording videos where they said they did things and then subsequently when they've been freed and particularly when they've left the country, they've retracted it. So even if we were at some point to get to hear her speak, I don't think that in itself is any guarantee of her freedom and well-being. The other critical thing, of course, is that we don't know what pressure might be being exerted on her or her family behind the scenes. So pressure on families using relatives as leverage is incredibly common, whether that be human rights lawyers who find that their kids are being chucked out of their schools, or, you know, relatives losing their jobs and so forth, or even being jailed. That's very common when there are big sort of political issues that they need to deal with.
And what's happened to Zhang Gaoli, the man Peng has accused?
Well, we don't know. He has made no comment. The foreign ministry continues to say it's not a diplomatic matter, although I think you could argue it might be now that the US and other countries are speaking out on it.
We are deeply concerned by reports that Peng Shuai appears to be missing after accusing a former PRC senior official of sexual assault. We join in the calls for PRC authorities to provide independent and verifiable proof of her whereabouts and that she is safe.
Peng's played in three Olympic Games, and so people might expect that the International Olympic Committee would respond to her case. So what they did was they put out a photo of some of their officials seeming to have a Zoom call with her.
The IOC saying that Peng is safe and well, adding she appeared to be relaxed. The IOC did not provide NBC News a copy of the video.
What is the IOC's stance on this?
The IOC always wants the show to go on, one might say. The IOC says quiet diplomacy is always better, which seems very convenient, doesn't it? And there's no doubt that they don't really want anybody raining on the parade of the Winter Olympics any more than Beijing does. They want this story to go away, essentially. So I don't think anybody is at all surprised that they think things are fine. You know, as the WTA has said, this is not something that reassures people. This is not something that tells us that she is safe.
Even before this news about Peng came out, there was a growing movement to boycott the Winter Olympics that are due to happen in Beijing in February, and in particular, the way the authorities have treated the Uyghur minority.
Sophie Richardson is the China director at Human Rights Watch. She says Peng's case may deter athletes from attending the Winter Olympics in Beijing in February.
We argued for a long time that the Chinese government should not be awarded the Games because the government had failed to fulfill any of the human rights related promises it had made to get the Games.
How has what's happened most recently added to that pressure?
From the Chinese perspective, the way it's being spun, I think, is, well, you know, look, the outside world always wants to sort of spoil our party. It doesn't want us to have a success of these games. And, you know, they're just going to find more excuses to mess things up for us.
And Shep, today, President Biden confirmed publicly for the first time that the United States is considering a coordinated diplomatic boycott of the Beijing Winter Olympics over China's record of myriad human rights abuses and forced labor.
We know that the Biden administration is considering a diplomatic boycott. Liz Truss, the foreign secretary, is apparently pushing hard for a diplomatic boycott. Some people would argue that there are so many other big issues where the West is in conflict with China, and to anger China by imposing a boycott, even if it's at the diplomatic level, is counterproductive ultimately.
Rounding up religious minorities and putting them in internment camps is something the world said should never happen again. But it is happening right now in China to more than 1 million Muslims.
And so the flip side of that is that in the US, you've got a Secretary of State who's talked about genocidal acts happening in Xinjiang. So can you really have a Secretary of State talking about genocide and then still send a delegation off to the Olympics? There's something pretty peculiar about that.
And how has the WTA reacted?
What's really striking is that the WTA have stuck to their guns. We've had sort of sports organisations run into political trouble in China before, and inevitably they always say we're terribly sorry and back down.
The Chinese government is denying NBA Commissioner Adam Silver's claim that it asked the league to fire Houston Rockets general manager Daryl Morey.
So we certainly saw with the NBA, you may remember in 2019, the general manager of the Houston Rockets urged his followers to stand with Hong Kong during the big protests over there.
The tweet then set up an international controversy and created sharp divisions in both countries. China's canceled some broadcasts of NBA games in the country. Silver said that the financial fallout from the league's rift with China has been substantial.
There's Mesut Ozil, the former Arsenal player. There's certainly been a feeling that his career may have been hit, partly because he was speaking out on the Uyghurs. I think what's really striking is that Steve Simon's made it clear that he will walk away from China. He says, you know, this is bigger than business.
We make too many decisions today in this world, especially when it comes to social issues, that get compromised due to financial, business, political issues. And that can't be tolerated. This is an issue of right and wrong.
And bigger than business is not really a sentiment that we've heard very often in the sporting world, or more broadly, when it comes to China. You know, we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars.
And when Steve Simon, the chair of the WTA, says we'd be prepared to walk away, how much is he actually putting on the line there? I mean, how much money could they be losing by backing out of Chinese competition?
China is a huge growth market for sports in general. So it's partly there's a huge number of people there and therefore a big audience already. But it's also about the way that the economy is developing and the prospects for the future. But even in 2019, the WTA held 9 tournaments in China. They were worth $30 million in prize money. So there is a lot of cash to be made in that market.
Well, I have found it really remarkable and quite encouraging to see the WTA being so vociferous in keeping up the pressure like this. It's unusual, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it has been extraordinary to watch. I mean, that to people who follow the news in China has been the really amazing thing. It's definitely not new to see disappearances. It's not new to see these proofs of life. But what is striking is the passion that has been shown about this case and how much they've really stuck with it. The WTA has not backed down.
We have to stand behind this and insist on an investigation to make sure that we find out what the true outcome of the situation is.
Coming up, the lingering questions about Peng's well-being. Tanya, for Peng herself, what could happen next? And how can we know if she's safe?
I'm not sure we will. We're talking about an athlete who seemed to be at the end of her career in many regards. She's 35. She last played, I think, in very early 2020. I think there was not a great expectation necessarily that she'd be sort of going on to sort of major new developments in her career. So I think we might well learn that she'd retired, but more likely, I think we just won't learn anything much about her. It's very possible, probable, that we won't see her speaking openly in any forum where she might be asked questions again.
Ever again.
I wouldn't hold my breath. Do I expect to see her outside China in the foreseeable future? No. I can't see why they would want her to leave the country, put it that way. It's not impossible that she might face a case against her on the grounds of something like taxes, for example. We know with dissidents such as Ai Weiwei, you know, he was accused of tax evasion.
Ai Weiwei, the artist.
Yeah. Ai Weiwei, the artist, yeah. So it's not unusual for people who have displeased the authorities to be held on some grounds that most people would say has very little to do with why they're actually being held. And we might just find we don't hear from her again. I mean, I think a great deal depends on really how much attention is paid by the outside world. But I think if we continue to see her or we see more of her, it will still be under tightly controlled circumstances.
And, you know, it's interesting to think about Ai Weiwei as a comparison because obviously in his career, he's made speaking out against the Chinese authorities and living outside China a big part of his art and his activism by force of circumstance as much as anything. But Peng was not trying to talk out against the Chinese authorities, was she? She wasn't trying to make a point about the Chinese Communist Party as such. She was trying to say, this is an experience that happened to me personally.
Something I often found as a reporter was that many people who had found themselves in deep trouble with authorities were not people who had deep-rooted political feelings. They weren't people who were desperate to have democracy in China. They certainly didn't want to overthrow the Communist Party, but they weren't even necessarily looking for great sort of gradual political reform. In many cases, they had very simple demands. For example, to know why their children had been poisoned with melamine in their drinking formula, or why so many schools collapsed in the Sichuan earthquake, killing so many children. Something happens in their life that they feel compelled to address, and it puts them on a collision course. One of the people I really remember, not a very well-known woman at all, but she had been a policewoman. And, you know, she said to me that she always sort of thought that people who ended up in trouble were the troublemakers until it happened to her.
Tanya, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was Tanya Branigan. She and our other journalists will keep following this story, of course, at theguardian.com. Today's episode was produced by Rose De Lurabiti and Georgina Quach, and sound designed by Rudy Zagadlo. The executive producers are Mithili Rao and Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.